What time is it?
Game time!
Wade with a hidden shoulder fake.
To the rack!
Oh my goodness, Wade!
Taps up a three.
Bam! Jimmy Butler's big time onion!
Side jumper off the mark.
Oh, back with right hand! Felicia right in the mug! A Miles Plumlee!
Throw it!
Oh my!
Down,
gosh.
Big man!
Throw it down!
On the new home of the Chicago Bulls, this is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
And welcome in, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Today on the show, we're going to hear from our radio play-by-play team, Chuck Swirsky, Bill Wennington, as Chuck interviews Bill, who grew up in Canada, moved to New York, and then his days with the Chicago Bulls. Some stuff you didn't know about the big seven-footer, our radio analyst. Also, we're going to discuss the new United Center's East Edition. United Center Vice President of Business Affairs, Joe Myra, will talk about how the Jordan statue got moved to the new 19,000-square-foot atrium. And also, all the building space. And what's in it for the fans as they officially open their 190,000-square-foot office and atrium complex adjacent to the building's east end, debuting a destination it hopes will become a year-round gathering spot for fans, even on non-game days. Well, but we start with the one and only Sam Smith, the Hall of Fame writer from Bulls.com. Sam, thanks for joining us here on Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, I want to hear all those. I want to hear all those other interviews.
You will.
I want to learn that secret stuff on Bill Wennington.
Is there a fine line here? The question becomes, how does Fred Hoiberg balance winning and getting to the playoffs with giving consistent minutes to some of the younger guys?
Well, and that is, I mean, you focused, as you would, Steve, you focused on the key issue. And, you know, it's really it's a tough assignment that Fred has. You know, it comes with a lot of criticism as a result of this, but, you know, you've got Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, Rondo, you know, Robin Lopez, basically, veterans who are about making the playoffs. And you got a bunch of kids essentially going through auditions. And I think Fred has handled it as well as you can handle it. You know, and you've heard guys say, well, I don't know, you know, if I'm playing, what my role is. But, you know, yes, that's true. That's the way it's going to be. Because Fred has basically said, you know, Jimmy and Dwayne are playing. Dwayne's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Jimmy's a starting all-star. It doesn't matter what they do. They're playing. You always got those guys. And you need your leaders in that way. Everybody else, if you perform, you're playing more. And that's what's happened with the young guys. You know, as if Jerry and Grant had a good game, Portis, whatever the case is. You know, now Portis has been starting, you know, with Taj traded. But the minutes and the finishing the games and all those things are going to depend on performance. And I think that's really the only way you can do it with the kind of roster you have, because management wants to see all these guys, you know, want to see Zipser, you know, with McDermott traded, want to see Valentine. And having to make some decisions about going forward, who can play where, who can do what, you know, now Cameron Payne as well. So, you know, Fred is basically saying, I've got to balance my veteran players who are about the playoffs and, you know, the fan community. I think the team wants to make the playoffs. I also think the Bulls want to be in the playoffs because I think they feel it's, and I agree, it's good for the young players to get that kind of experience. So it's a kind of a balancing act to get those guys out there, which he's been doing. And they're going to be judged on how they perform. You know, if Valentine makes four threes, he's playing again the next day. If he's 0 for 5, he's not. If Jimmy is 0 for 5, he's playing the next day.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. If he's 0 for 5 again, he's still playing. And it's, you know, it's sort of tough. That's the way it is when you're a rookie or a young player. And that's the difference if you made the All-Star team.
Our guest, Sam Smith from Bulls.com. I'm Steve Cashel at Chicago Bulls Live. Let's go back to the trade, Sam. Cameron Payne and Joffrey LeVern come over along with Anthony Morrow from the Oklahoma City Thunder for Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott. Begin with Cameron Payne. He wears number 22, 6'3 guard in his second season out of Murray State. What's the goal here for, I know Payne's excited to be here, but the Bulls are hoping this is kind of the centerpiece of the trade, correct?
Well, yeah, no question. You know, the deal, if you break it down and look at what they did, it's understandable in the sense of, as much as we all love Taj Gibson, just like Pau Gasol last year, it was clear he's going on the free, you know, he's going to the open market. He's going to try to get a deal. He's going to be 32 years old in June. And, you know, it's just time. They probably weren't going to be able to get anything for him in exchange. So, you know, with Doug, even though I like Doug, his shooting component, you know, they give him 3 years. He didn't perform to their standard, and they say we got to look at some other guys. So the exchange for that is they haven't really settled on a point guard. Rondo is a short-term guy. You know, looking at Jerry and Grant. You know, Valentine's not exactly a point guard. Michael Carter Williams came in and, you know, has been up and down, has been injured a lot. So Payne is a guy they liked in the draft a couple of years ago. He ended up, you know, just like Doug, at the bottom of the lottery. So it's, you know, kind of equivalent level talent, you know, as draft goes. And he's a kind of a true point guard. He's more of a scoring kind of point, but most of the top point guards in this, you know, era are. I'm not saying he's not. He's not Steph Curry, but you know, that kind of a player. And he's got a good handle. It's been difficult early on because Fred has been playing him some with Rondo, so he's playing a little bit off the ball. So they're going to have to work him in to see if he can play, you know, strictly point guard, run a team, you know, make plays off the ball. And so that's sort of a process. But, you know, it looks like he has something to him. He has been inconsistent kind of shooter, but his stroke looks okay to me. You know, his first game against Cleveland, he was 2 for 3. You know, the next game he didn't shoot the ball quite as well against Denver. But, you know, so the old line, he looked good leaving his hand. You know, so the form looked okay. He's a confident player. You can see that. Handles the ball, you know, well. And, you know, we haven't seen enough of him running the team. But I think that's the notion of how do you get a good point guard in this era? And, you know, they're sort of going through, you know, tryouts basically for it. And he's the latest one.
Sam Smith, our guest, Bulls.com. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live. Sam, let's talk about the upcoming week here. And it's a busy month for the Bulls. 15 games in this month of March. And immediately two on the road this coming week at Detroit, at Orlando. Then the Houston Rockets come to town. Then Boston, Charlotte back-to-back. So overall, it's a pretty difficult month of games, isn't it?
Well, they're all difficult when you're 500, unfortunately. And as we've seen, you know, the Bulls have beaten Cleveland, they've beaten Toronto, they've beaten Boston. You know, they've lost to, they lose to Orlando earlier?
Yes, they have.
Yeah, they lost to, maybe, you know, Philly they haven't, but they lost a number of teams down there. So they're the kind of team, and we've seen it, you know, it's been frustrating at times that, you know, they have the ability because of Jimmy, because of Wade, you have, you know, two really high-level players. You know, Lopez, you know, NBA starting level center, you know, and you've got some young guys who do stuff. And so, you know, I think with some of the changes, you know, no negative toward Taj, but I think with some of the changes is a possibility of a little more movement, you know, in the lineup, you know, a little more flow. Immediately after the trade, after the deadline, they were, you know, getting more assists and shooting the three better. They've gotten more threes up, so. You know, they've surrendered a little bit of defense with that as well. You know, I think even though, you know, potentially all the games are difficult, you know, you're going to get, you know, after you get Houston later in the week, they've been playing, you know, among the best. Boston, yet they played well. Charlotte is going to be a desperate team trying for the playoffs. Memphis is always tough because they're physical. Washington, one of the hottest teams. Yeah, so we can go down the list. They will still look like a playoff team. You know, when they get it together, they can play with any of these teams, and it's just a matter of what we all talk about, you know, getting that consistent effort and making some shots.
Sam, great stuff. Appreciate you joining us.
All right.
Sam Smith from Bulls.com. This is Chicago Bulls Live. When we come back, Chuck Swirsky and Bill Wennington. It's Chuck interviewing Bill, taking us through his life story. It's interesting stuff. Stay with us as Chicago Bulls Live rolls on this Saturday night. From the United Center, stay with us on WLS AM 890.
This is the new home of Chicago Bulls basketball. Hear every Chicago Bulls game here. WLS AM 890. Now back to the Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Earlier this week, Chuck Swirsky sat down with his radio sidekick, Big Bill Wennington, to discuss Bill's upbringing and a whole lot more.
Bill, we aren't broadcasting the game, but let's talk about, because I've heard so many, you're in the Canadian Basketball Hall of Fame. Where did you grow up in Canada?
Montreal. Really, the West Island of Montreal and Beaconsfield was the most I spent most of the time there. Went to high school, Beaconsfield High School. For a year and a half, I was at in Dollar De Zormo and went to Lindsay Place High School.
So you were born and raised in Montreal, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes.
And so you grew up there. At what stage in your life did your folks say, Bill, guess what? We bought you skates.
I can't remember not having skates. I think I was two, and I was skating on it. We'd go out to the parks and just skate outside with my mom and my dad. And I remember as we got a little older, just going down and taking my brothers and sisters out to just the frozen pond, so to speak, and just go ice skating.
So you get a pair of skates, you're skating on the pond. Did someone give you a hockey stick and say, guess what? You're bigger than a lot of kids, and here's a stick, and let's play.
Well, everyone thought I was older because I was so much taller, but I did. I played hockey when I was young, but I wasn't that good. I was a defenseman. I was big. I did bump into people. I wouldn't say I was quite checking yet because I wasn't that aggressive as a young Bill Winnington, but I got in the way a lot, and I like to tell people when I started playing a little bit of travel hockey that I was so bad I started because no one else on the team could carry the load, so to speak, when I was playing.
All right, so a couple things, Bill. Normally, it was like people such as myself, when you're the smallest kid in the class, you get picked on a lot. You were probably the tallest kid in many of your classes, if not the tallest. What was that like when you would walk into a classroom?
Chuck, I was the tallest person in my school. When I was 12, I was 6'2". And, you know, it was if my friends, the people who knew me, knew who I was, and I was it was fun. But if you didn't know me, I was a freak. Because I was really tall. Like I said, I was 12 years old. I was 6'2". I was 6 foot before I was 11. So I was just kind of the Frankenstein in a room, so to speak.
And did that kind of affect you at all? Did you think about it much or not really?
When I was 14, 15, somewhere around there, I realized that it didn't matter what I did. People were going to stare at me. So it was just, might as well just do what I do then. And it was good most of the time, but sometimes it got me in trouble.
Did you have a lot of passion for hockey?
I liked it a lot. I mean, obviously in Canada, you watch it all the time. I played, and like I said, I wasn't great at it. I was good at it, and I actually stopped playing hockey when I was 12. I started playing basketball at that point.
Did you want to stop, or did you outgrow skates?
I outgrew skates.
I
was 12 years old. I had a size 13 skate, and the next year I had a 14 shoe, so I couldn't get skates anymore. Couldn't find skates anymore, and so I had to stop playing hockey. And I remember it was an accident. We were out swimming at the Pointe Claire pool, which was a big hub for swimmers back in the day. A lot of the Olympic swimmers swam in Pointe Claire, and we were out there after swimming lessons. This guy was just in free swim, just said, you know, you ever play basketball? He thought I was about 16, but I was 12. And that's how the connection started.
Had they found skates, Bill, because this could have affected the rest of your life regarding whether or not you were going to gravitate to basketball, had they found skates that fit your feet, do you think you could have pursued a hockey career regardless of basketball?
I don't know, Chuck. Chara's got nothing on me. He's only 6'9".
Yeah, right.
But, you don't know.
You don't know.
I loved hockey. I'm very passionate. When I love something, I play it. Play hard and I give it my all, but you know, I don't know if I would have been good enough. At that time, the game was a little bit different. I might have been able to be a fighter.
Why not? So
like Larry Robinson.
So you're introduced to basketball. Did you love it right away?
I did. I wasn't very good, but that was when I speak to young people today, I tell them that's the most important thing I learned in basketball is that I love it. And the first year was a struggle. But I enjoyed the camaraderie. I liked the style and the pace of the game.
And you're still in Montreal at the time.
I'm still in Montreal, yes, in Beaconsfield. And I just loved it. It planted the bug or the seed, whatever you want to call it, and I started to play, and I wanted to play more. And so I got into these leagues and started going to summer camps and kept improving.
And so when did then you decide or your folks and your family decide we're moving somewhere other than the province of Quebec and Montreal, and we're going to the States?
That was when I was 16. That summer, my parents were divorced when I was 12. And that summer, my mother was living in Long Island, New York, and they decided it was time for me maybe to move down there, see if something could happen down there with basketball. So we went down there and ran into, very fortunately, Bob McKillop at Long Island Lutheran High School, and ended up going to that, got into Long Island Lutheran, and Bob McKillop kind of paved the way and remolded me into a basketball player.
And you became a McDonald's All-American, and then, of course, you're being recruited. And you were recruited by everyone in the country. Did you enjoy that?
Being recruited? It was fun, although Bob and I had a couple arguments because I did want to go visit the University of Hawaii, but he wouldn't let me. I kind of wanted a mid-season vacation, if you know what I mean. But actually, to be honest with you, I was smart enough to understand at that time. I did not look at any West Coast schools on the West Coast because I understood that I wasn't quite disciplined enough at that point in my life, that if I went out there to play basketball, there would be too many distractions for me, and that might deter from my progress.
So it comes down to Duke, Virginia, and St. John's. Not too many people turned down Duke.
Now, it was actually very hard, and I would have been Coach K's first recruiting class, and it was difficult. As a matter of fact, when my son was being recruited by them for football, we went there, and my wife and I were walking around. I looked around and said, how did I say no to this? But the times were different, and I wanted to stay in New York by my mom. And Duke at the time was an up-and-coming program, was building. Coach K had just started and turned things around. And Jim Larranega and Terry Holland at Virginia had Ralph Sampson, and things were going looked real great for them. But, you know, St. John's was up-and-coming. The Big East was just the new sports basketball league in the East Coast, and it was doing tremendously. It had just started the year before. And I thought it was a great opportunity basketball-wise for me at St. John's. And also, that way my mom would be able to see every game I played.
And during that window at St. John's, you played with players such as Chris Mullen, Walter Berry. I mean, these are names, folks, just to let you know, and you can Google them for our young listeners who are saying, I've never heard of Walter Berry, and Chris Mullen, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But, I mean, these were some very good players you were alongside with.
Oh, yeah, and also Mark Jackson.
Mark
too.
Jackson.
So we had really had a great team, and went to the Final Four in 1985. Really, the chemistry on that team was great, and we had kids from all over. We had inner city kids, we had suburban kids, and obviously we had me from a different country. But we all got along really well, and I give a lot of credit to Coach Conoseca for molding us all into that family atmosphere and getting us all to accept and really love each other as brothers, both on and off the floor. And it was really a great time. And I highly, you know, I talk to young people today, they're talking about college, and it really is the best experience of your life. And making the NBA has been phenomenal. Don't get me wrong, it's been outstanding. But to be a young man playing basketball in college where your responsibilities are really going to class and playing basketball, you don't have to worry about bills and, you know, all the things that we have as adults, it's a great time in your life.
The responsibilities you had as a student athlete, were you a good student?
I was a good student. That's one of the things Bob McKillop helped me, because I was in Canada, I was doing just enough to get by. Whatever the passing grade was, that was my grade was going to be, because I didn't work hard at it. Not that I didn't know things or I wasn't smart, I just didn't apply myself. But Bob really worked on me and got me to understand that, you know, you are who you are, and if you take shortcuts in one part of your life, you're going to take shortcuts in all your life. And so my grades came up dramatically at Lutheran and then continued on through St. John's. So was I a great student? No, I was a good student, and a solid B-plus average.
Time for a short break here on Chicago Bulls Live. When we come back, part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with his radio sidekick, Bill Wennington. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.
Everything you need to start your week smarter and happier. Big John and Ray. Monday morning starting at 5 on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back, everyone. The Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Now we present part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with Bill Wennington.
So your career, Bill, we know that you have three rings with the Bulls. How would you assess your NBA career?
I think I surprised a lot of people. I don't think when I first came out, people would think that I would have a 13-year NBA career. I think, and I know, a lot of what happens in professional sports is, I don't want to say luck, but more timing and being in the right place at the right time, playing in the right system. I fit into what the Chicago Bulls were running, the triangle offense. I was a big man that could move on the floor. I played good defense. I could pass the ball. I could shoot the ball from the perimeter. And I set good screens, which was really what the Chicago Bulls needed at that time to run the triangle offense. So I fit in. Was I a low post scorer? No, I wasn't a low post scorer. So if I was on another team like the New York Knicks, who wanted me to play there, I would have had to try and fill Patrick's role. And am I a low post? I can play in a low post. I played in low post in high school, but was that my strength? No, my strength was running up and down the floor and my jump shot. So that just fit in perfect with what the Bulls needed. So overall, I'm very happy with my pro career. I wish it was 20 years later that I started. I wish I was got drafted in 2015 as opposed to 1985.
You ever think about this, Bill? I mean, the kind of money that's out there now, and God bless the players. I will never begrudge a player. But you ever think, you know what? I could be probably in the 12 to 14 range right now.
I look at it, and yes, you think that sometimes, but it doesn't matter because nothing's going to change. It can't happen.
You're right.
But then I also look at the time when I first came into the league. I was making more money than our starting point guard as a rookie, and I didn't play much as a rookie under Dick Motta at all. So it's all relevant to what times you were. You look at guys like Johnny Red Kerr, and I made more money in my first 4 years of playing basketball than he made in his whole career. And Johnny Red Kerr was a great player back in the day. He was played, what, 699 games
in a row?
Yeah,
he was the Ironman until Green.
So, it's all a matter of the times and the basketball. And you know what? Basketball has been doing great. And the sport has been doing phenomenal. Fans love the game. They come and watch the games and obviously watching them at home coming to the arenas. So it's taken off, and we're very fortunate to be able to play a game. And I think most guys do understand that it's something that, we've worked hard to get there. I'm not taking anything away from guys because it's hard to get there and it's not easy. But in the long run, we're fortunate that we have this outlet to showcase our talents and to make a living playing a game.
Bill, that period when you were able to win three rings with the Bulls, during that window of time, were you ever able to have quality time with Jordan or Pippen or Phil Jackson where you weren't talking basketball? Were you able to ever have like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours where you were just talking life? Or are things just in such a rush and we got a game, we're on a plane, we're on a bus, we got to go, we have another game, we're coming home for 24 hours. Once the season's over, you exhale and you have time for yourself.
There's lots of opportunities to have time. You get to the cities that you're playing in, it's 24 hours in a day. You have a shoot around that's going to last an hour to 2 hours with travel back and forth, and you have lunch, and then you get ready for the game. You're sitting on an airplane, you play cards, you talk. You have a lot of time to, and that's.
Were you in that inner circle with a Jordan and a Pippen as far as just, you know, all that, or was it just crazy during that period of time where even teammates?
You could get in if that's what you want to do. They'd be going doing their things. Again, they're not all of our interests are the same, but when we're.
So who were some of your closest teammates?
On the team, Judd Bushler, Steve Kerr, Luke Longley, Randy Brown, Dickie Simpkins. We hung out a lot, but we'd also go every now and then. I'd go and play cards with Michael if they needed. They had their four guys that would play all the time, but every now and then one of them was sick or didn't want to play. I'd jump in and play the game. We'd go to a city. We wanted to go out to dinner. We're going to go to this restaurant. A couple guys, let's all go together. Want to go to the movies? We go to the movies together. So there was a lot of time that we spent together, and that's, I really think, important for the chemistry of a team because you really have to like and respect all the players that you're playing with, or you're not going to be the best you can be.
How intense were the card games?
Well, let's just say we got a lot of, everyone talks about alphas. We talk about the Chicago Bulls today, and
right.
A lot of the word alphas come up with Jimmy Butler, Rajon Rondo, and Dwayne Wade. Honestly, on an NBA basketball team, there's 14 alphas, or 15 if you got a 15-man roster. You're all alphas, but you have to be smart enough to wear you fit in, and none of us like to lose. So the games were pretty intense. And obviously Michael hates losing. So, he'd raise up the intensity a little bit. And you better be able to hang. Because he's going to make it rough on you.
Phil Jackson. Bill, if someone said, describe Phil Jackson in one word, what would that word be?
Great. I think astute. I think one of the things that Phil does better than any coach that I've ever played with is he really was able to recognize body language and knew how to mold and keep everybody on the same page. There were times where I was disappointed. I wanted to play more. I was frustrated. And it seemed every time I was just ready to blow up and cause a scene, he'd come over and, hey, you're doing great. Hang in there. We got Indiana coming up. Rick Smith's there. We're going to need you to play well. Keep working hard. You know, we played a bunch of small teams. We played Phoenix. They're small. They're running around. You haven't got the minutes I know you deserve and want to play, but we're going to need you, so stay here. So he was really good at keeping everyone on the same page and keeping you involved and focused.
So
on
he
moment.
Read you. He was able to get that feeling, that vibe that,
yep.
Okay, Bill's on the brink and I need to pull them back.
Exactly. And he was also good because he didn't want me to be a soldier. He wanted everyone to be a free thinker and go out and play and do it their own. And that's part of the triangle, is just recognizing what's open and doing and moving to the open spot, taking what the defense gives you. But also in life, he wanted you to do the same thing. So he'd let you go out there and feel your way around. But if he thought you were going way off track or getting ready to blow up and cause a scene or a distraction, so to speak, it just kind of reel you back in, pull you back in, let you know where you are on the team. And that was also one of his strong points. Everyone kind of knew where they fit in on the team and what their role was.
Okay. You're also a parent, and your son, Robbie, whom I've met, outstanding young man. I give Ann all the credit in the world for that.
So do I.
But all kidding aside, Bill, he was a tremendous high school star at Loyola Academy here in the Chicagoland area, folks. And he played football.
Yep.
Did you encourage him to play football? And after understanding now, as we gain more information about the sport itself, are you glad he didn't pursue a football career? Even though maybe he wanted to at Boston College, are you glad that he's not in the sport?
I'm very glad he's not in the sport. And if I had to do it again, I would not encourage it. I didn't really encourage it. I just didn't discourage it. I wanted him to be his own person. And at least my feeling was I didn't want him to have the pressure of me living up to what I was. So he was a very good basketball player. He was probably a better basketball player than he was football player. But he loved football. And I think the pressures for him, you know, he didn't want to have to compete with me or what I was. And so,
it's tough. I'm sure it was tough on him. It's tough on you because yep. You want to see your child happy.
And it was so when he decided at the end of his junior year that, you know, he wanted to play football in college, and then that summer he wasn't going to play basketball anymore with the AAU programs, you know, I was disappointed, but it was his decision. So I was happy for him. I was happy that he was able to make that choice. And, you know, he was recruited. He wanted to play a tight end. He wasn't offered a scholarship to play tight end, but Boston College was very interested in him. All the Ivy League schools wanted him to come there. But he really liked Boston College, so he walked on, got in and walked on and made the team and was on a scout team and got hurt. He got a bad concussion at the end of the year. And when he was still having headaches at Christmas when he came home just before their bowl game, he's like, I don't know if I can do this. This hurts too much. And I was like, well, you got it's your life. And he said, I can't do it. So he called a coach, and that was his sports career over. And we talked about, you know, he's a good enough basketball player. He could go play basketball somewhere if he wanted to. But he loved Boston College. It's a great school, Chuck. I mean, what they do up there and the whole atmosphere on campus was absolutely phenomenal. So for him, it was a great fit. And he stayed there, and he graduated. And he's still up in the Boston area working now. But having to do it again, I wouldn't let him play football. I would have stopped and put my foot down and said, you know what? No, you're not going
to
play.
Yeah. Well, at least he has the common sense to say, you know what? Even though I might enjoy and have passion for the sport, I also have to think that, you know what? I want to make sure that I get to 40 or 65 yep. or 85 or whatever. So that's good on his part. So, Bill, before we let you go, give me your greatest game you've ever played at any level, not necessarily points and rebounds, but one game where you walked off that floor and said, wow, this is why I play the game.
My first game in the NBA, playing against the Lakers when I was with Dallas, first regular season game. Didn't play much, but that game, realizing the work that I had done to get there, and that if I kept working hard, who knows what could happen. So coming home, reflecting on that game, that, hey, I made it, but this is not over. There's more that I can do. So just reaching those little steps, really, and the love that I had for the game and the ability that I had to push myself to work hard to accomplish things are the things that stand out.
That's Chuck Swirsky with Bill Wennington. Many thanks to the Timeout Bulls podcast, driven by Lexus and available on iTunes. When we come back on Chicago Bulls Live, we get the inside scoop on the new United Center's East Edition as we visit with the UC's Vice President of Business Affairs, Joe Myras. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.
To make your drive home a little easier, Steve Dahl is here. 2 till 6 every weekday afternoon on WLS AM 890. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Our inside look at the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and beyond. Steve Cashel back with you. Well, the Bulls and Blackhawks fans this week will have some new territory to explore at the United Center, the arena, officially opening its 190,000-square-foot office and atrium complex, which is adjacent to the building's east end. And it's a beautiful destination, which will become a year-round gathering spot for fans on game days, on non-game days. And let's bring in the United Center Vice President of Business Affairs, Joe Myra. Joe, congratulations on what you guys have built. I remember for a couple years, the last couple years, walking past in those winter months, coming to the Bulls games here at the United Center and getting ready for our broadcast and just seeing this thing from a hole in the ground where we used to park to this structure that was all steel and now this beautiful, beautiful building. So take us back to the beginning, if you will, to how this East End was created.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Steve, and thanks for having me on. I'm happy to talk about it. We're proud of this space. You know, that it's been 2 years and it's gone like a flash. I've been in the United Center for about 6 months, so I've been, you know, kind of the tail end of it. But it's really a beautiful building. You mentioned a couple of the areas that are available to the fans. Our atrium space is 19,000 square feet. It's 5 stories. It's a beautiful entrance. It's climate controlled for the winter months, like you said. So we're happy to provide that to our fans, with or without a ticket. It's a great energy. It's a beautiful space. We have some new LED boards where we can start to really show our brands. We can show off the Jordan statue now. It's basically a centerpiece for the atrium. I know fans have been wanting that for the last couple months. It has not been available, but we knew we'd promised and we delivered. Earlier this week, we had a great ceremony, really kicked it off right. Happy to provide that space to Bulls fans. We encourage folks to get out there and check it out for themselves. We have a brand new box office, and it's a different type of box office. And it's not the glass window and behind bars feeling of the old days, speaking through the microphone. We've got a concierge type service, some of our great box office employees there available to help sales, service, whatever it may be, just to help you find your way. We're also bringing on a new retail store this summer. We've got some renderings up there. You can kind of take a look and see what those photos might look like here in the summer. We're very excited about that. 10,000 square feet. Bulls gear, Blackhawks gear. It's going to be a state-of-the-art facility. We've got a local designer that we're very proud to partner with that's working on that space right now, working very hard to make that space a beautiful opportunity for fans to come take a look and check out some gear. We also have some additional plans kind of looking at what the arena looks like. We've vacated 25,000 square feet of space. The Bulls offices have moved over to the new office, the Blackhawks as well as United Center employees. So we have this beautiful office building, but now we have space to expand the United Center into the new atrium space and kind of mesh that together. We've got some designs going on, some concepts that we're thinking about, from food and beverage options to a restaurant potentially, as well as new entrances and how we can add to the fan experience in this new beautiful space.
Oh, fantastic stuff. Again, United Center Vice President of Business Affairs, Joe Myra, joining us here on Chicago Bulls Live. I'm Steve Cashel, talking about the United Center's new East Edition, and it's a beautiful 19,000-square-foot atrium. Take me back to the Jordan statue. You mentioned that. Did anything change about it? I know they moved it. It's almost at the same spot that it was when it was outside,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so a lot of people don't know, Steve. It's the exact same spot it used to be. We did have a temporary location out near gate 5. So on the what would be the north side of the facility, temporarily for fans to check out while the construction was ongoing. It was definitely a process moving that statue without a lot of nervous folks that day. We did move it twice. We did pretty hard to message to our fans what's going on and what's happening with that statue. It's a showcase piece. People travel from all over the country, all over the world to come check it out day in and day out, even on non-event days. So putting it back to its original location with adding some lighting and putting it in this area, I mean, Michael Jordan played basketball inside, right? Let's put him back indoors.
That's great. So, Joe, let me ask you now. It's not just open on game days, correct? I mean, that atrium
correct.
Space is open 7 days a week, is it?
Absolutely. We want to encourage folks to come down and check it out. It'll have a different feel on a game day. But, you know, we're basically open from about 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Fans can come take a look once our store becomes online. That's another space for folks to engage and check out the Experience United Center. And it's really just for fans. We're trying to elevate our service, elevate the experience in the United Center. It's an extension of what happens in the building and outside the building. And we want to see traffic in there. We want to encourage fans to come take a look. It's a unique place. You know, not many sports arenas have that type of facility. And I think it's a tribute to our ownership and the commitment they're making to the fans and the Near West Side.
Absolutely. And the retail store then is going to be open, because right now you really have to, in order to buy Bulls gear or Blackhawks gear from the Bull Market or the Blackhawks store, it's got to be during game night, game day.
Absolutely.
But now, when you guys build that retail store, and we're expecting it sometime this summer, if I'm not mistaken,
correct,
it'll be open again like 7 days a week so people can shop anytime.
Right, we're very excited about that. You know, like you mentioned, we've never had that retail location as a 365, 7 days a week operation. So now we're going to offer that day-to-day, day in, day out, evenings, mornings, weekends. We're hopefully going to catch a lot of traffic coming from downtown, from fans traveling from afar. Gives them another opportunity to kind of check out that location and engage with fans outside of just games when the arena's open.
Again, we're visiting with United Center Vice President of Business Affairs, Joe Myra. I'm Steve Cashel at Chicago Bulls Live here from the United Center. And, Joe, I also wanted to ask you a little bit about what's in it for the Chicago Bulls and the Chicago Blackhawks, because you got this beautiful building. Now these people have windows. I understand they have a fitness facility, but it's always great for the organization to move into so-called
absolutely
new offices, right?
Absolutely. Well, I'm one of those employees, so I can see it firsthand. It's quite amazing. It's a tribute to our ownership group, the vision, and just the care and commitment they put into their employees. We have a fitness center that's available for all employees. Amazing collaboration spaces, windows, like you said. A lot of our employees were in areas with no windows in the arena. Now we have beautiful daylight, a ton of areas to work, and we have a cafe. It's on the leading edge of what's happening in office spaces around the country, and we're happy to be part of that that new generation. It's quite amazing. It's really helped us work together as an entity between the United Center, the Blackhawks, the Bulls, and very excited and proud of our building to show off to our fans and those that will be working with the front office moving forward.
And I think that's the big key. Not only is it great for the organizations, but as you mentioned, the fans. You know, now there's full access, not only on game day, but full access for people coming around the country, people listening to us around the world. We have different people that are making plans to come to Chicago, and now United Center is going to be a destination spot if it wasn't already, right?
Well, I hope it matches the passion of our fan base. I mean, everyone that comes to the arena is excited. There's a lot of energy around the arena. We're just trying to tap into that a little bit and extend that out. It's an extension of the United Center. Our fans now have this great space to enjoy. It's something we can deliver back to our fan base that's been very loyal, and we hope to continue to program that in unique ways that'll make it a special experience when you come to the United Center.
And how many different restaurant opportunities do you expect will be there? Will that be a situation where fans can come before a Bulls game, before a Blackhawks game, and have a nice meal and maybe enjoy a situation and get a good drink? And will that be open also on non-game days that you're expecting?
Yeah, absolutely. We're exploring all those opportunities. I think what we're focused on is having an overall total experience where you can come to the United Center, you can eat at a great restaurant, you can have fine dining, you can look at a specialty cocktail or a craft beer or or take your family to enjoy a meal at the United Center, experience the energy, the atmosphere, be around folks who want to enjoy the same experience you do before the game, potentially even after the game. And it becomes this new experience that we like to tap into and really expose to our fans and have them help us define what that space and what that experience looks like.
And again, we're visiting with Joe Myra, United Center Vice President of Business Affairs. And Joe, talk about what it's done to the community. I know Mayor Ron Emanuel really talked about that, saying, and I know Rocky Wirtz, Michael Reinsdorf, President of the Bulls, Rocky Wirtz, President of the Hawks, touched on it, saying, you know, years ago, before the United Center, this wasn't a great area to come visit, you know?
Right.
And now it's becoming a great area. It's a destination, and it's safe. And I think that's really important.
Well, we just want to continue, much like ownership mentioned earlier in the week during the event and the ribbon cutting, was just continue to reinvest in the United Center, allowing the neighborhood to grow with us and be a reflection of our community and the extension of the Near West Side.
Wonderful. Joe, we wish you continued success. Can't wait, because it's a fluid thing. We know it's continuing to just get better, and we can't wait for the final designs and everything to be put into place. Thanks for joining us at Chicago Bulls Live.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
That's United Center Vice President of Business Affairs, Joe Myra. Well, that will do it for this edition of Chicago Bulls Live. Many thanks to our executive producer, Dave Zaslowski. Our technical director is Jonathan Bregman. Help, of course, from Bill Karambelis here at the United Center. Many thanks to Bill Wennington and Chuck Swirsky as well. We've got the Bulls pregame show coming up next. It's the Bulls and the LA Clippers from the United Center. I'm Steve Cashel. Thanks for listening to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890.
WLS AM 890, Chicago's news, talk, evolved.